You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City
for
right
more.
Here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis
oh, yes!
City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Welcome back to the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I'm your host, John, and alongside me, as always, is the voice of Minneapolis Game Day, the Nate Morales. We hope you had a great holidays listening to our family archive over the break. Nate, did you inflate the old spare tire with turkey and pumpkin pie this year?
Dude, you have no idea. Yeah, so as part of a goal to not let all the good work of the summer get totally reversed and shot to hell this winter, I started doing like a daily exercise, like circuit. Nice. And it's just like, I did core today and it's mm-hmm. Turns out I'm really just like not athletic.
You're like, blow the whistle, ref.
I can't do that. I'm not coordinated enough to, anyway. So I don't know. I got a lot of work to do. Long, but the turkey. Got to get rid of that turkey. Got to get rid of that pie. Got to load up again at the end of this month on what, ham, beef tenderloin. I don't know. I got to figure something else out.
I'm with you, man. I now that my back is 100% healthy, I've been back on the exercise train myself. And on Thanksgiving Day, I made the mistake of lifting weights. And whenever I lift weights, I get like famished, hungry. Like, I don't know. My body's like, feed me to replenish all the muscle tears that you just did. And I just eat and eat and eat. And I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna rein it in this year. And then I lifted and I was like, I'm going to eat everything. And I ate so much food. And then the next day I was like, it was a bad idea, but hey, I'm back on the straight and narrow though.
Nice. Let's make a workout show. Let's make a workout show.
We should call it Blow the Whistle Ref.
Make a video. Well, man, we've actually got some content today. Some things that we really want to talk about. First of all, the big game from the weekend, the Olies take home the title. We've got national champions right down the road at St. Olaf. While you were lifting weights, the Crows were working out too. There was some Turkey Weekend combine action that we're going to talk about. And then we also want to make sure we're talking about the upcoming futures trials that are going to be starting this week. And there is coming up a club shop event. And we have to talk about those new away kits that dropped. So there's a lot to talk about today. Let's dive right in. It was a historic weekend of firsts for the St. Olaf men's soccer team. They beat Amherst College, home of Calvin Coolidge. They beat them 2-1 in overtime to take home their first ever national championship. The first ever national championship, by the way, for a team from Minnesota. John, did you watch that game?
Yeah, I watched all the tournament games. I supported the Crows that are in contingent over there in Northfield. I did check out the game, and it was an interesting one, man. First off, talk about always the bridesmaid. I think Amherst has come in second place like 4 out of the last 6 years.
That's what the commentator was saying.
Yeah, can't win the big one. But I want to just – we're going to talk more about the game, but I just want to say that the level of soccer was extremely high in this tournament.
Yeah.
Who was in it? I mean, every game that I watched of the tournament, I did even catch some. I went over to Samuel Ruiz Plaza's old stomping grounds, watched a couple of the Masaya games before they were knocked out, and I did watch a little bit of the a little bit of the run that Eau Claire had that ultimately ended against the Olies. But I'm super impressed with just the tactical changes and the pressure that this St. Olaf team had. And we'll talk a little bit about first-year coach Justin Oliver and assistant coach Matt Gibbons here in a bit, but very, very impressed. I think that it was a master class in setting a team up for a tournament run.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to hear your thoughts on that. Just to comment on the game itself, I'd say it was an amazing game. I think two really evenly matched teams. And like you said, the level of soccer was so, so high. You know, I watch a lot of D3 games, a lot of MIAC games throughout the course of the season. And this was far and away the best Division III game I've ever watched. But the Olies, they fell behind early in the second half. It was scoreless going into the half. And again, it was, like I said, just two teams that were really, 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 really good. And both of them, you know, punching and counter punching, and nobody could get that goal. But the Olies fell behind early to the Mammoths of Amherst College. But it was our guy, Hakeem Morgan, who knotted it up in the 62nd with I'm going to call it a near impossible angle from which he scored that goal. It was phenomenal.
Well, sorry.
Go ahead. No, that was it. Go ahead. You go ahead.
I think that this is where I get into the tactical masterclass, because we've all seen the holdup play that Hakeem Morgan has at an advanced level in the attack when he was with Minneapolis City, when he's at St. Olaf. He's just very good at using his body to shield off defenders, and it's a big body, so it's very hard to get the ball off of him. And leading up to that goal, you saw Coach Oliver, Justin Oliver. I'll make sure that I note that. Don't want to give Tyler any credit. He didn't do anything. but Justin dropped Hakeem back into the more of the attacking center midfield role, and almost like a holding midfielder, but holding midfielder in the offensive end, where he was dropping back and able to keep ball in the attack. Mm-hmm. Where up to that point, whenever they did get into the attack, it was a lot of 1 versus 3 or 2 versus 4. But with him dropping back in and then having players like Shea Bechtel and Casey McCluskey running off of him, then he was able to get involved as a late trailing runner. And it's how the goal was scored. He dropped in, he held the ball up. McCluskey was able to break free, got the ball, and then Hakeem found a spot. McCluskey slotted it into him, and it was one of those left-footed shots that, like, the goalkeeper either has to cheat on the near post or hope that he doesn't get one through his ear hole. And Hakeem chose ear hole and just smashed it right past the Amherst goalkeeper. But I will say also that this Amherst team was huge. I think they had like 4 or 5 players above 6'1".
Yeah.
And they played like it. They were super physical. You could tell that they were prepared for ultimately the offensive MVP of the tournament, Casey McCluskey, who I think had a fantastic tournament. I mean, the guy scored, was it 4 goals in the tournament?
And scored the winning goal for the semifinal and the final.
Yeah. About in a second, this game too, he missed a wide open goal that would have put the game at 3-1. But their game plan for him and for Victor Gallman was smash and grab. It really was. And I think that they were pretty lucky to not have at least one guy sent off on a double yellow, because it was constantly fouling to stop counters, fouling to stop anything going. And the whole time, all the Olies did was absorb that punishment and just continue to try to find methodical ways back into the game.
Yeah, they're definitely not a team set up for physicality beyond maybe Victor Gallman able to dish it out as well as he can take it. Yeah, of course, Hakeem. Yep. But you know, after Morgan nods it up, both teams just trading punches, like I said, and much like just like the first half. And I mm-hmm. definitely got the feeling as the second half wore on, and the physicality wasn't really working, that this game was gonna head to OT, and head to OT it did. And like you said, here comes Casey McCloskey. The Oilers put it away early in the extra soccer time. I think it was like a minute or two in. Let me take a look at the report.
Yeah, it was pretty early, maybe 3 minutes tops.
Yeah, 91st minute. Yeah, minute in.
And it came from a busted up play where the back line of Amherst, they didn't do a ton of holding onto the ball. They did a lot more. They're very direct from mm-hmm. the back. And the one time they tried to swing it around the back, the guy had a heavy touch and she was able to get off of him. And then because Hakeem had drawn the defensive center midfielder away, by dropping in, McCloskey and Shea Beck, and then ultimately it was a two on two, and Shea did enough to hold the ball up to draw in that last defender and then slide to McCloskey who buried it.
Yeah, the bespectacled star of the tournament, able to slot it home past that Amherst keeper. That side of the field, by the way, every time the keeper was down there, they were fighting the sun. Mm-hmm. And we know what that's like at Minneapolis City. But I think still it was a phenomenal run of play. And the Oilers were able to defend well the rest of the game. They weathered a frantic storm near the end to lock it in. And they started celebrating.
Yep, absolutely. And there was a brief holy shit moment, though, when former Crow Peter Forseth, the goalkeeper and ultimately the defensive player of the tournament, appeared to handle the ball outside the box. And I don't know if you remember from watching it, like the commentators were just like going crazy, like that's a penalty and just like freaking out. But what they failed to realize is that the goalkeeper can have 99% of his body outside of the box as long as there's one thing inside the box, Nate. Actually, three things, the ball in both of his hands. And yep. Peter did keep the ball in the box, but it was one of those moments where it's like, really, that's how we're going to go out? Like, by our goalkeeper handling the ball inside the box. We've seen that happen in Minneapolis City in the past. And you're like, oh, come on. It wasn't the case. So,
John, what an accomplishment for the Oilers to win this tournament. And it's made all the better considering it was Justin Oliver and Matt Gibbons' first year as head coach and assistant coach for the St. Olaf program.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it before. Like, the way they had this team set up, I think they were either the leading or in the top half, the top 1% of the highest scoring teams in the country. And, you know, you look at that and you're like, well, you know, the defense sucked and you had to outgun people. That necessarily wasn't the case. A lot of times the style play in Division III is very much so direct, get the ball forward, create as many chances, try to score goals, because it's a very results driven business in college soccer, very mm-hmm. much like high school. Like, a high school team, it's very rare you see a high school team put the ball down and play. What happens with a team like St. Olaf, who does try to put the ball down and play and exploit areas of weakness, is there's a lot of opportunity to be pressed and to give up. You're being pressed. And I think Amherst came out thinking with their physicality and their size that they could just kind of push St. Olaf all over the place and then outscore them themselves. And that wasn't the case, because every time they tried to overload through some sort of press, it was the calm nature of any number of people in the center of the field, in Gallman, Buzikovic, we mentioned Morgan dropped in there. A few other players came off the bench, some younger players that they're going to have to lean on for the comeback run here next year. But like, they were just able to constantly like find the extra pass and eliminate any sort of danger. And yeah, there was, I shouldn't say eliminate any sort. There was some danger, but it was all danger and nothing where they were like out of position. So I thought it was great. And I'll say this, like, I'm hoping that that Casey McCluskey's phone is ringing, because that guy is, it looks are a little bit deceiving, because he wears, you know, the rec specs, and you know, he's got some, you know, some curly locks that go along with the rec specs. But man, mm-hmm. the guy can play, and he can use both feet, and he can defend, he can play on the front foot in the attack. And it reminds me a lot of Will Kidd, to be honest, where it's that guy who's going to play both sides of the ball, makes the right decisions, like makes the right runs. I thought he was well-deserved offensive player of the year for the tournament. So hats off to Coach Oliver and Gibbons. They did a great job. And I think my last point would be that a lot of folks put, you know, an asterisk on this one, that this was Travis Wall, the previous head coach's, you know, his brainchild. Mm. But if you go back and look at it, you know, over the course of the last 5 years, who was sitting at the seat next to him and likely doing all the recruiting? It was Justin Oliver. And so I don't take anything away from this victory, like some have, because it's Justin's first year. I think that he had his hands in the cookbook to get this thing going, and was very capable to take it over the finish line and put it on the table.
Yeah. Worth noting, John, that this tournament was not a cakewalk for St. Olaf. They had to go through, they were the number 11 team in the country, by the way, had to go through number 12, Carleton College, who they beat 1-0. They had to go through number 21, last year's national champion, University of Chicago,
who beat them already in the season.
Yep. Beat them in the first game. Yep. Yep. And they held on to win that one 2-1. They had to beat number 18, Washington College out of Maryland. And then finally, number 13, Amherst College. So, I mean, that's four ranked teams that they had to stroll through, not to mention University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, who's no slouch. They had been ranked at some point in the season. So just a really difficult tournament field for St. Olaf. And they were able to make it through all the way. Being amped up to come back to the murder, like we talked over a couple shows that you're talking to Victor Gallman during the season, you're talking to Hakeem Morgan, you're talking to some of these guys, and they're just like, I can't wait to come back. I didn't get to play a lot. Can't wait to come back. I'm all in on Minneapolis City. What does this kind of run do for a player's mentality, for their swagger, when they do come back in the summer?
Well, they, you know, everyone else has to wear sunglasses because their rings are so shiny. So there's that. a lot of bragging rights. But no, I think that it just adds the level of confidence that that you've taken your game or your soccer journey to the ultimate step, regardless of division, and you want to continue that run of success. And there's potentially an added level of work effort put in, whether it's game time or training time. And that can be very contagious. And especially if you're thinking about an allotment of five players that were allowed from one school, and that some of these guys are seniors, and they might be interested in talking to some of the other pieces to say, you know, like this summer, let's go try to get another one somewhere else and come back to Minneapolis City and bring some more of those pieces with them, which would be fantastic for us. So I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited to talk to those guys. I'm excited to talk. I've been texting with Justin and Matt Gibbons throughout the tournament and, you know, speaking to them, and we're, you know, a little bit of a cat out of the bag. We're going to try to get a round table with all of the former Crows and current Crows that are in the coaching ranks here after the turn of the new year. But I'm really excited to hear about everything from those two and their philosophy to the season, how they took on the tournament, and ultimately how it felt to win that title.
Yeah. I'm excited for that one. Hope they can all find the time. Right.
Yeah, we'll make it work.
Yeah. So congratulations are in order to Justin Oliver, Matt Gibbons, Hakeem Morgan, Victor Gallman, Shea Bechtel, Robbie Buzikovic, like all the Crows and all the rest of the Ole players and staff for, you know, your first ever national championship. What a phenomenal way to start your career as a collegiate head coach.
Yeah, right. Going to bed that night with the trophies laying next to you in the hotel room.
I can't even believe it.
Yeah, congratulations, guys. We're really proud of you. So while that was going on, you know, the Thanksgiving break was happening, and the 2024 cycle for Minneapolis City has officially begun, Nate, as just a little over 2 weeks ago, almost 2 weeks ago, the Thanksgiving Day Combine. So the first step in site trial process has begun. A select group of 46 players, ranging from invitees from last season's roster through college players that were not off playing in tournaments, got together at the new home of Minneapolis City Soccer Club training, which was Winter Park, the old Vikings facility in Prairie. And let me tell you, I am so glad we moved our home for training closer for me, for selfish reasons. Yeah. But it's a beautiful facility, and it's really great. It's got everything, and it's kind of our own when we get in there. It's very, very much reminds me of Champions Hall, where we kind of owned it and made it ours throughout the training process, throughout the course of a cycle. So really, really happy to get those guys together.
Nice. Yeah. I think, you know, I didn't even know this was happening. And so when I saw the recap and some of the videos, I'm like, what, who was there? This is the faces that were here. And it was a veritable who's who of past and present Crows, just like way to take advantage of all these guys being home for the Thanksgiving break. Let's get them together and play some soccer and have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll note that faces that were in attendance, to name a few from last year's USL2 roster, there was Evan Siefkin, Scotty Heinen, Stevie Lamar, Jonah, of course, was always around a soccer field. Zach Susie, Fade Nwurokondo, Damian Humphrey was there from the Futures. You had Jordan Ross, Nick Kent, and then you had a contingent of a whole bunch of Augies, and Mizell Harris, Mitchell Munzing, Cesar Daniel, Tomas Mena. Then you had Camel 2, the Hermansons, Mutu was there, Alvaro Arce, and Griffin Price. I'm leaving some players off for sure. And then there were some new faces there. Ben Pennell, he was Carlton's leading goal scorer, who Carlton, like you mentioned, had a great run. California native, he was there. A player by the name of Mesfin Rota, a freshman at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, my old alumni, or my old school. And he's by way of Spain. And let me tell you this, Nate, if he continues the cycle with us, this guy is elite. I was unable to make it. So I'm a part of what I signed up for was obviously to help evaluate the trial, whether it be first team or futures. So I watched the video back I watched a lot of VO video once I got back from the holidays. Really didn't help the old spare tire sitting down watching soccer all the time. But but Mesfin Rota was a new addition. Also from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Asher Azuzu, just a hulking athlete from a physical perspective, but he was an integral part of the attack for the Panthers. And then MTA alumni and also UWM Panther, goalkeeper Nolan Meyer, he's a freshman there, another really great option for the goalkeeping room, whether it ultimately ends up being the Futures or first team. And then let's see here, what else we have? Last but certainly not least,
Ian who's Shaul, this guy?
Ian Shaul is a member of the U17 men's national setup. So he was one of the last cuts that did not make it to the World Cup on the World Cup roster, but he plays with the Portland Timbers, and right now he is a potential recruit for Notre Dame, which is making a nice run in the Division One, NCAA tournament going on right now. But he's actually a Minnesota native who whatever didn't work out with Minnesota United in the youth ranks, and then moved out to Portland for an opportunity with former Academy Director Rob Zoll and former MTA Academy Director Rob Zoll, who took the youth director position at the Portland Timbers. So he was one of those guys, kind of like Caden Clark, those players that just like didn't stick with Minnesota United. And doesn't look like he's from a territory rights perspective is in the cards for United. I don't know what's all going on. Lots going on over there. Man, this kid can been at 17, going into his last year of high school. Just the way this kid reads the game and his execution is pretty elite. So some great new faces, and then there were some old faces. The first two I'm going to name off, you're going to be like, what? We're in town, apparently.
Yes.
Opportunities from a work perspective have brought both of them back to the cities.
Oh, I thought Max was in Washington still.
He was, but apparently he took a position that has the opportunity to work from home, and he was like, why not go play some soccer for the summer?
Interesting.
Yeah, and then I think Will Kidd made a permanent transfer for work, but then there were also some familiar faces. Jacob Popkin was in the mix back from his first full professional year in NISA, so it was good to see Jacob back, and I believe took a huge step playing professional soccer. From what we saw, we always knew he was supreme talented. Certain pieces that just weren't they weren't right for the time period and the players that we had in front of him at his attacking midfield position. But I really liked what I saw from Jacob. Keba Jané from St. Thomas, the goal scoring machine, he was back in the mix. And then you had two players who I thought were done in
Keba from Augsburg.
Or Augsburg, excuse me.
Yeah, he's the leading MIAC goal scorer 2 years in a row.
Yep. So he's back in the mix. And then Samuel Ruiz Plaza and Mito Youssef were there.
Have you seen what Samo and Jonah have been doing and how they've been training with some like crazy Iron Man stuff?
Yeah, whatever they're doing. But I mean, those guys, you're never going to have to worry about those guys. And Mito's doing it too. So they're all in shape.
The fitness level is high.
Yeah, I think the year away from the game with us, I think kind of sparked a few things in Samo and Mito. So it was good to see them. And then also we had two trialists from the first open trial that we had that were elevated, and another three were invited, but they couldn't make it. So yeah, it was great, man. It was a setup where a wide range, obviously representation along with some familiar names. But the setup was similar to our COVID setup where we had those sessions where there were four teams of 7-on-7. They were repping neighborhoods like Lindell, North Commons, Loring Park and Powderhorn. And they played a round robin over the course of three sessions. So they had, I think it was 3 days in a row, when it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that those guys got together and played. And then there were some results. So the MVP of day one, Camel 2, definitely a name we've heard of. MVP of day two, Nick Kent. And then day three was Owen Johnson from Gustavus. He was the day three MVP. And then from an awards perspective, you know, Jeremiah Johnson loves to hand out his awards. So Golden Gloves, Evan Siefkin, our cemented number one last summer, was the top spot from a goalkeeping perspective. The Wingman Award was a tie at four assists from Stevie Lamar and Cesar Daniel. And the Golden Boot went to Owen Johnson, who scored five goals on the weekend. And then Team Lindale was the team that took the top spot. And ironically, Nate, Team Lindale, their defense was anchored by Max and Nick Kent playing next to each other.
That is intriguing, isn't it?
Yeah, and the day one, outside of Camel kind of going off and scoring a bunch of goals, day one, you could have just said player of the MVP of day one is Kent. That's all you had to say. That Lindale team, I think they only gave up like one goal that day, or they went undefeated, or they went unscored upon. but it was really interesting to see the two brothers play next to each other and how well it worked. I thought it was
they're not
fantastic.
And they're not like close enough in age really where they have had played together, right? Like,
I don't think
Max
ever
was
played together.
Max was out of McAllister before Nick started.
Oh, absolutely. Like, Nick's only a sophomore and Max has been out of college for almost 3 years now. So they looked pretty darn good together. And it was a point where like the subs were coming on and off. And every time Nick Kent was like going to come off for a sub, like the guys were like, no, you stay on. So he played every minute the whole time through. So it was nice. Dale, the team, like I mentioned, they won three, lost one. They ended up taking the top spot, the top title on 9 points with 13 goals for and only three against in 3 days. So it was a pretty good representation there. And I don't have the roster of who all else was on that team, but yeah, it was awesome. It was like, oh my God, we're back. And it wasn't an open trial. We're back. It was like legit. Like, we're back. Familiar faces, like guys chopping it up. It was good to see.
Nice. Well, this is a nice event to have, John. It's a great way to keep players that we're interested in fresh and connected in the off season, and you know, maybe a little self-indulgent to spend this much time covering it, but it really is fun and exciting to start to try to read the tea leaves, who's around town, who's interested in playing.
The one thing I'll add, sorry to interrupt you, is
no, it's good
to see the interest level in the club from across the MIAC, from guys who maybe had an opportunity with the club but didn't stay in the summer, that were from out of state but play college soccer here, from players from that played maybe at different USL2 teams across the country, where like, you know, I think the word of mouth kind of spread that like Minneapolis City is back to being the place we want to be at. I kind of got that sense from just watching the video and guys warming up and stuff. Like, there was a lot of communication between the guys who had, you know, maybe invited some friends that to play. So it was really good. Really, really good.
That's awesome. What was I going to say before you interrupted me?
Totally.
I know. So like I said, it's fun to read the tea leaves and you get excited about some names, but it's also important to keep in mind that, you know, the USL2 is a lot higher level than a lot of these guys went away from, right? Like, you talk about the Will Kids or the Max Kents, right? And it's like, oh man, how great would it be to have them back in the mix? You know, Samo, Mito. I think we've found in the last couple of years that it's tougher to play in the USL2 than you'd expect. So gotta take this with a grain of salt, temper your expectations, and just hope for the best. We're gonna have some great teams this summer, regardless.
Right. And I think that what I'll add to that, and I promise this is the last piece, so we'll move on to the next segment here. But in my opinion, culture is where we've kind of fallen down a little bit. And if you have a player like Will Kidd, who is the all-time leading goal scorer in the club, and he can still play with glimpses of what he used to be, might not be a bad idea to just have that guy around and utilize him if he's willing to take a reduced role from a development perspective, because obviously we're not in the game of, or in the business of developing 26-year-olds. We're trying to develop the younger talent. But with those overage spots, if you want to bring in players like Max and Will Kidd and have that, you know, that core of guys that have been there before and know what this is about and can still perform in whatever role Coach Craig and staff has for them, I don't think it's a bad idea, but we'll see. Obviously way too early.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're going to continue to test the waters. The trials keep coming. The club hosted the second of, I think, four open trials that are planned this offseason. They hosted it just after the Thanksgiving break. And as a reminder, these sessions have been crucial to the club since its inception. Like, what are the stats are in front of me here? 425 total players have trialed with Minneapolis City since 2016. And every time we go through these numbers, I'm like, this seems pretty high.
400, it's actually higher. We had another fifth. We got to add another 75 to that.
Sure. Yeah. And 36 of those players were selected to active rosters. 21 of them were called back to fill roster needs, even though they weren't initially selected. So that's a total of what, 57. So that's over 10%. And of those guys, you're talking about everyday Minneapolis City names for years, Max Kent, Jonah Garcia, all-time leading goal scorer, Will Kidd, right? Mm-hmm. So you were there, you were at the trials. How did they go?
Went great, man. You know, like most trials, there's players that have some real upside that we look to elevate into the next phases of the trial process, whether it's with the first team or maybe some younger players that showed that we invite to the futures portion of trials. But the hard part is that there's always a wide variety of players that come to these types of sessions, and that can be a little difficult for some of the players that have a little bit more of an advanced ability, because they might be playing with or against some players that you know might not move forward, and that can be really, really, really tough for them to showcase their best. Mm-hmm. However, on top of the 3 to 5 that we identified in the first trial, there was a handful of other players that the staff is considering elevating and bringing back. You know, so there'll be some familiar faces in the next set of trials, whether it be the futures coming up this week, from a U21 or U19 perspective, and then, you know, when the USL team gets back together. So I'm really excited to see what some of these guys can do as far as, you know, making that next step up. You know, it's tough when you have to evaluate some of these players and you're watching the trial and you're like, you know, that guy, you know, is good. However, they might be 24, 25, or they might just be on the cusp of 23. And, you know, you're like, well, you know, they're not, they might not be it because of their age. And that's tough to say and hear, you know, for some players, but it's the reality of it.
When you're not even that old.
Right. Exactly. But we're not like, and part of it too is like some of the guys, I was like, if we were still in the NPSL, this guy would definitely walk right into the next phase of trials.
Yeah.
But we have those age restrictions, and we're not going to front load a U21 team, because we call it U21 for the futures, but we have five guys that are, you know, 23. You know, right. So it's tough, but it's a great opportunity, and we keep putting our money where our mouth is and elevating players. So I'm pretty excited. But the next trial up is all futures related, coming up this Friday. What's that, the 9th, 8th? Yeah, December 8th. And the trial is $99. The first set of trials starting out on the 8th is for the U21 group, so birth years 2003 through 2005. It'll be at Winter Park. There's two groups. So there's group A at 7 and group B at 8:30. And then the next wave of trials for the U21s will be also at Winter Park on 12/15, so the following week. Same time for group A, same time for group B. And then we look at December 19th and December 22nd is when we start looking at the birth years of 06 through 08. If you're interested or someone you know would like to be told they should try out, please do. You can go to mplscitysc.com under the futures tab in the navigation on the top of the page. You can click on there and there's all sorts of sign up information. So
yeah,
spread the word. No stone left unturned, Nate.
Yeah. And the futures program, as you know, is a phenomenal opportunity for young guys, especially now that it's been broken out into U21s and U19s. As we join both levels of the UPSL, on the local stage. And the thing is I think there's room in both of those groups, U21 and U19. And I know that they called a lot of returning future players who would have fallen in the U19 group into that U21 trial. So there's a lot of room for high school kids. If you're thinking about elevating your game, get on out to the Savage Dome.
Anyone in your household thinking about the U19s?
He'll be there.
Right.
He'll be there. That's for sure.
I'll circle him on my evaluation sheet.
So, thank you. Well, John, Minneapolis City dropped 5 kit designs on Twitter this week. in advance of the member vote. Just like those scarves, this team is going to defer to the membership to make the decision on what away kits the Crows are going to be sporting for the next 2 years. We do every other year, right?
Every two, I think.
Every two, yep. If you haven't caught the set on Twitter yet, you have to take a look because there are some doozies out there. We've got the 10,000 kit, which harkens back to the days of the Minneapolis Lakers. It's blue and yellow. It's a departure from our standard color scheme, but that's why I got my vote, John. We're mixing it up when on the away trips. I think that'd be sweet. There's also the war paint kit, which is looking like an evil Crystal Palace jersey. The swaths of pink and blue cutting down the middle of the shirt like Shea Bechtel through his enemies. You got the Le Pointillist kit, which is a pink work of art that reveals an image of Matt Elder saving a Duluth PK if you stare at it long enough.
Yeah. Or Victor Gallman, considering it's French.
That's a good point. The futurist kit is another option. It's a bold statement that the future is in fact black and pink. And finally, the feathered friend kit. It's a chaotic Randy Johnson-esque explosion of pink feathers on black. And it's the kit that matches the scarf that won. I'd be actually kind of disappointed if that kit won, because it just feels like too obvious. But that's just me. What are your thoughts on this year's batch? Do you have any favorites?
I do have some favorites. And I agree with you on the pink feather kit. I think that would be a great warm-up jersey or training top. Yeah. I mean, that would be really great for, because we already have the feather on the home, which I think is great, like the feather sash. Mm-hmm. I really like, we haven't gone all black before. So I really like the black. True.
The futurist. Black
with the futurist.
Or are you talking war paint?
Whichever the one. What's the one? Hang on. Let me go to make sure I need the right thing. Let's see here. It was the one with the all black with the paint coming, yeah. I think, across.
Yeah, the war paint.
What's it called here? Let's see.
It's a good one.
Yeah, the war paint one, and then the other black. That one's a little bit too minimal for me. I like the one with the, I like all black. It incorporates our third color in blue. Looks a lot. It's a lot like the Bowie kit, but it looks more like a paint stripe. So I think I like that one, but I also like the one that you chose. I like them all, but if I had to choose one, I'd go with the baby blues.
Yeah. Just something different.
Yeah.
Let's mix it
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely.
Let's mix it up.
So tell people how they can get into the voting, Nate.
I will. If you want to vote on the kit, but you're not a member, there is still time. All you got to do is head over to MPLSCitySC.com and, buy yourself a membership. Plenty still available. It's early in the season. That's part of why they front load some of these fun votes, is just to make sure we lock in those members transparently. And I think it's totally, totally worth it. If there's something else going on too, John, we've got a new office that's opening in downtown Hopkins on Main Street, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty exciting. And we're going to be opening it up on Saturday just to show people around, invite people in. And it's all for good. If you bring a coat or a jacket to donate, you can bring it to our new, if you've got a coat or a jacket to donate, you bring it to our new office at 1901 Main Street. It's in Hopkins. It's the basement unit. So, you know, that, there's going to be bars on the windows just in case, just kidding. But that is, if you got to stop by from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on December 9th, this Saturday, for our winter coat, winter jacket donation drive. And while you're there, check it out. We got a whole ton of merch. It's like the revival of the club shop there, including some one-off stuff, some From the Vault items that are going to be perfect for the holidays. You got to get there and just grab some things that ended up, we'll say, lost in the move from the club shop in South Minneapolis. And they were kind of put in storage, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh shit, We still have these. That's awesome. So come on by this Saturday, 1901 Main Street, Hopkins, Minnesota, from 10 to 1. Bring a coat, bring a jacket to donate, and say hi to some friends from Minneapolis City.
Yep, absolutely. I've been there. It's quite a bit nicer than the previous club shop.
You don't have to pee like under the stairs.
No, there's actually a shower in the bathroom in this one.
Wow.
So yeah, if you're a little dirty coming off the pitch, go take a quick shower.
Why not?
There's multiple storage areas. There's an area for a little bit of an office. It's at the basement of a State Farm agency. So if you see a State Farm sign, you're in the right place.
All right.
Down and I will note that the coat drive is not just for adult coats. You can bring children's coats as well.
Especially.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this week's show. And thank you to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprince.com. Make sure you're supporting our small business friends this holiday season. If you're looking for that unique gift that says you've got some perfect soccer taste, you got to head over to footballstadiumprince.com and fill up that cart. Don't forget, use the code CROWS10 for 10% off everything you purchase, from mugs to t-shirts to posters. It's awesome. And it's all, you can find Minneapolis City stuff there. You can find anything from your favorite club or honestly your favorite player internationally. As a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3. So consider beefing up that tax deduction ahead of next year through a charitable gift to the club. And like we mentioned, memberships for 2024 are on sale. It's the only way you can vote for the new away kit. Make sure you cement your seat in the stands and grab a voice in what Minneapolis City is going to look like in the next couple years. Head over to mplscitysc.com and get yours today. If you want to talk to John or I, we made it simple. You got to just hit us up at the People's Pitch on X or at mplscitysc if you want to talk to the club. You can always email us too, mcscpodcast@gmail.com. I know you're going to have a ton of questions across the offseason, so rev it up. Let her rip. And that's all for this week. I'm Nate. That was John. Big things coming up around the corner, so stay tuned. Until then.
You got Kenton.
Oh, that's better.
You got Kenton.
It sounds so noble. You've been Kenton. Yeah.